Call the meeting order. Representative Paulson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You get no respect, Representative Paulson. You don't have a quorum, so.
Okay.
But you can start your presentation. Members, I move House File 20.
Mr. Chair and members, the bill before you is identical to the bill that we had before us last year, and I believe, Mr. Chair, and we'll wait for the quorum, I think we just have a brief amendment to include that should have been in the original draft. I think it was left out inadvertently. But, Mr. Chair and members,
the
bill before you.
Representative Paulson, you want to move the, or should I move the amendment to
put
the bill in the order? Members, I move the amendment H0020A1. We need two more members. Well, we'll wait and move the amendment, Representative Paulson, since I guess we don't have a quorum yet, but anyway.
Mr. Chair,
did you tell all the legislators that your bill was up this morning, Representative Paulson?
I should have promised.
Probably should have sent out an email, Representative Paulson.
Mr. Chair and members, the bill before you is identical, as I mentioned, to the provision that we had last year that was included as part of the omnibus tax bill. What unfortunately was not enacted into law, it enjoyed strong bipartisan support, not only in the committee, but also in the floor of the body, I believe. And I think the identical provision would undergo the same support in the Senate. But the legislation is essentially to give an income tax subtraction and deduction for those folks who generously enough decide to make the determination that they would like to be a live organ donor. And the deduction would be for those expenses to help offset those costs associated with giving that organ donation, which can be very, very significant in terms of time off and travel and overnight stay, et cetera. And so it really is a bill that is designed to help send a message of the importance of organ donations. And there is definitely financial stress that is associated with the individuals who make this altruistic donation, because the out-of-pocket costs can be very, very expensive. Is it a critical factor? Is it going to make or break the determination of those folks who do determine to donate an organ to a friend or a family member or anonymously? No. But the law is just not about money itself. It is about sending a message of the importance of live organ donation. There are thousands in Minnesota that are waiting for donations currently, as well as hundreds of thousands across the state. I think there's still a bill that may be pending in Congress actually dealing with this. And, Mr. Chair, members, there are just a handful of people I think would like to briefly testify and as well as answer questions that are here today.
Okay. Representative Paulson, if you have witnesses, please... testifiers, please have them come forward.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Kathy Garvey. I'm a nurse, and I work as a transplant coordinator over at the University of Minnesota and the Hospital at Fairview. We have a big kidney transplant and organ transplant program, and I'm here to say that our program and supports House File Number 20. Organ transplant is a very successful way of treating patients with end-stage organ failure. Despite the generous gifts of individuals who donate their organs upon their death, the supply of these deceased donors has not kept up with the need. In the U.S., as Representative Paulson just alluded to, there's over 80,000 people waiting for organ transplants. 60,000 of them are waiting for kidneys, and over 2,000 of them are living here in the state of Minnesota. Transplants from organs donated by living donors have been done since 1954, when the first kidney transplant was done, and more recently other organs have been added. The need or the use of living donors has increased in recent years. In 2001, for the first time ever in our country, we used more living donors than deceased donors, and that trend is continuing. Living organ donors can donate a kidney, a lobe of their liver, a lobe of their lung, a segment of the pancreas, and a segment of intestine. These transplants that come from living donors offer better long-term results for the recipients. The organs function immediately, there's less rejection, and the surgeries are scheduled when both donor and recipient are in optimal health. It's also more cost-effective to do a kidney transplant rather than maintain a patient on long-term dialysis. The cost of the living donor evaluation, surgery, and hospitalization is all covered through the recipient's insurance benefit, but there are direct out-of-pocket expenses. In a survey of our kidney donors, our donors reported an average of $569 that they paid for travel, lodging, meals while they were here. there are also indirect costs, such as lost wages from work. And currently, our donors tell us that they use their sick time. The disability is available. Sometimes it's delayed until after their recovery period and not at 100%. Recovery periods can be anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks for our kidney donors and up to 3 months for the liver and lung donors. The National Kidney Foundation has also done surveys, and 24% of respondents at one time said that they were unable to consider being a kidney donor because of financial reasons. This bill will help remove some of those financial disincentives. We encourage your support for these lovely people that generously offer to donate to someone they love. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Garvey.
Mr. Chair, thank
you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, members. My name is Frank Yossi. I represent Mayo Clinic, Mayo Health System. I'm here not to take your time, but to add a hearty endorsement from the Mayo Clinic to this bill. Is a wonderful bill. It will not make a huge difference, as Representative Paulson said, in terms of the decision, because it is such a profound decision to donate an organ, but it will take away the financial disincentives, and we strongly urge you to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Iosi. The members, let's now, since we have a quorum, let's move, or the chair will move the A1 amendment to put the bill in the form that the author requests. Is there any discussion to the A1 amendment? Representative Paulson, you want to give us just briefly what the amendment does?
Mr. Chair, members, it basically just identifies the bill as the Gift of Life Act, which was the provision I think that the committee unanimously put in the bill in the tax bill last year.
Okay. Any discussion of the amendment? If not, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Paulson.
Mr. Chair, that's all I have unless the members have questions.
Representative Paulson, just one question. You, Section 3 of the bill, you have an alternative minimum tax subtraction. You want to give us an indication as to why you think this is important or imperative to the bill?
Mr. Chair, Section 3 of the bill does have that provision that providing for the alternative minimum tax subtraction component be there, so that it will prevent, if an individual makes the organ donation, it'll prevent that if the individual does decide to claim that deduction or that subtraction, that they will be shifted automatically into AMT. And it was some conversation we had with council about just having, I think, the potential of having more people shifted into AMT. This will help prevent that.
Representative Paulson, was this in the legislation last year?
Yes, it was, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Chairman Krenke. And I just wanted to make a comment and thank Representative Paulson for bringing this bill forward. He did this, I think, last year or the year before. I can't remember. And I mentioned then, and I think I would be remiss again if I didn't mention now, that Representative Darlene Luther, who was a recipient of an organ donation, carried this kind of legislation repeatedly, did a lot of things for the organ donation community. And for those of us who've been in the legislature a little while know that she passed away and was a colleague with us, and this was something she worked really hard on. And I want to thank Representative Paulson, who has really picked up that cause and carried it since that time. And it's very important, and I just really appreciate that you've done this, Representative Paulson, and I hope, Chairman Krenke, that you can find a way to include this in your omnibus tax bill. It's a small number that has a big impact for a lot of people, and I just want to say thanks.
Anyone else in the audience that cares to testify on behalf or in opposition to legislation? Any further comments or questions from members? If not, we'll lay over House File 20 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Paulson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Next members, we have Representative Abrams, House File 1254.
Thank you.
Chairman, I move that House File 1254 be recommended to pass and considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Mr. Chairman and members, House File 1254 makes two changes for more favorable treatment for charitable contributions. The first is dealing with the non-itemizer charitable contribution, which was a provision carried by then Majority Leader Tim Pawlenty in now Governor Tim Pawlenty in 1999. Under current Minnesota law, one half of charitable contributions in excess of $500 made by non-itemizers is allowed as an above-the-line contraction. What this bill does is it changes the 50% of the charitable contributions in excess of $500 to 100%. You may ask the question, why $500 threshold? The reason why is because there is an itemized deduction that shifts between, that's different for single taxpayers, married filing separately. So that there's embedded within that standard deduction a presumption that there have been some charitable contributions made. So people who are non-itemizers who make charitable contributions above $500, I think, deserve some recognition by the state, and changing the 50% threshold to 100%, I think, makes sense. The second is an issue that veterans on this committee are probably tired of hearing me harp about, which is the alternative minimum tax subtraction for charitable contribution. There is a Supreme Court decision in, I believe, 2001 called the Chapman decision, which disallowed charitable contributions in the alternative minimum tax, given how that contribution was previously styled as applying only to Minnesota charity. So the Supreme Court blue lined the entire subtraction. In special session, we were able to build back part of it. Governor Ventura, although he was somewhat sympathetic, wasn't being overly helpful to the legislature at that time. And on a bipartisan basis, we have tried to buy back the entire problem of the Chapman decision. Briefly, currently, you only get to deduct, if you are an AMT filer, charitable contributions in excess of 1% of your adjusted gross income. This buys the rest of it back. Now, the total cost of this bill is roughly $8.3 million in 2006 and $8.8 million in 2007. I've asked Paul Wilson to ask the department for a breakout. I would suspect that about two-thirds to three-quarters of the cost is in the subtraction, and about a quarter to a third of the cost is in the AMT adjustment. There probably also is an error in that it says that there will be some administrative costs. There may be some administrative costs for savings related to the bill. The only ones that I've been able to ascertain is that there would be one fewer line on the AMT, and I can't imagine that eliminating a line and eliminating some instructions or even eliminating the 50% is going to necessarily cost the department any money. I would suspect that it would end up being about a wash. So, Mr. Chairman, you know, you just don't know where these things are going to end up in the final mix. But I believe that the policies contained in House File 1254 are sound, and hope to have this one of the pieces of the mix to be considered when this committee is putting together the omnibus tax bill, hopefully later this month or early next month, Mr. Chairman.
Sometime in the future, Representative Abrams. Yes.
Not your line, Mr. Chairman. Please not your line.
Okay. Representative Nonblock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Abrams, maybe I missed this, but do you know how much of the cost that's in the revenue estimate is related to the Chapman case and how much it is related to the other part of the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nonblock, I've asked Paul Wilson to ask the department for a breakout of that again. I'm going by memory that Chapman is about... $2 million in change, and I think the rest of the bill is about $6 million in change, but that's just recollection, and we've had a couple of revenue forecasts since then, and the revenue forecasts will sometimes change the HITS model somewhat, and or it doesn't mean, I forget, but sometimes it changes the HITS model somewhat, and you know, those numbers ought to be run again, so we basically have it on a spreadsheet, and as the bill's being put together, it's a way to buy back part of Chapman or do some of the you know, it's totally scalable, move the 50% to 70% on the non-itemizers. Probably would also be a step in the right direction, but we should be able to get those scalable numbers.
Thank you.
Representative Knobloch, Representative Abrams, I believe Ms. Manzi can probably elaborate a little bit or give us some more up-to-date information.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abrams, I don't have official information from the Department of Revenue, but when I run these two options on the income tax model using the House version of the sample, which, as you know, is a little bit less complete than what Revenue uses, I get a cost of $2.9 million relating to the alternative minimum tax portion and $5.4 million relating to the non-itemizer subtraction portion. And that's for tax year 05 or fiscal 06.
Pretty good recollection.
Yep.
You say, Ms. Manzi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure really who this question ought to be directed to. I like Representative Abrams' bill. I was surprised by the revenue note and the reference that approximately 196,000 taxpayers would be affected. It seems to me that the type of people who are making charitable contributions in excess of $500 are more likely than not to be the type of people that would be itemizing. I was curious as to that number and how that, maybe if somebody from the department or Ms. Manzi could just describe how that number, how that estimate is made. I like the bill. I like what Representative Abrams is doing, but I guess I was surprised by the size of that number.
Ms. Manzi, you want to take a swing at that one?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Coles, as for the number of taxpayers affected, the number on the AMT portion is about 56,000, and the number on the non-itemizer portion is 140,000. I think that in recent years, as mortgage interest rates have come down, more people have moved to the standard deduction, because the mortgage interest deduction is one of the big things that moves people onto itemizing. I suspect that a great many people who own their homes outright but may have, you know, reasonably moderate to upper middle income may not itemize, particularly if they're retired. So that may be the population group that's making the contributions over $500 and qualifying for the non-itemizer subtraction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Manzi.
Anyone else in the audience want to testify in favor or in opposition to the legislation? Please come forward. Welcome to the committee. If you will just give us your name and who you represent, if it's an organization, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'm John Pratt, Executive Director of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, and we strongly support House File 1254, which provides for additional charitable giving incentives. Right now, many of our organizations communicate to the public and say your contributions are tax deductible. However, as we know, because of the non-itemizer situation and AMT, that's not true for all taxpayers. So our goal is to make that true. The benefit to the state is that this leverages a much larger amount of money. In 1999, revenue estimated that there were $53 million in charitable contributions that this was helping trigger. So it's a huge benefit to the state, much larger than the revenue loss, and it helps keep Minnesota at or near the top of virtually every measure of charitable giving, volunteering, and we believe it's the kind of activity we want to encourage.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Byron Lair. I'm an employee of United Way in the Twin Cities, and I'm here representing all United Ways in Minnesota. I also wish to speak in support of House File 1254. This is a bill that is important to charities in the state, and we believe that charities are important to the state in and of themselves. Charities and all nonprofits are an important part of Minnesota's economy. Charities are the largest section of the nonprofit sector, and we are regularly looked at to address human service needs. We rely on contributions. When government budgets get squeezed, contracts and grants with charities also get squeezed. And when the economy is slow, raising voluntary contributions gets harder. This bill addresses two hugely important sectors of the giving public. AMT filers, which are among the most generous of our contributors, and they are also among the most tax conscious. Correcting this leftover problem passed both bodies last year, and we believe deserves a yes vote also in 2005. Non-itemizers are also very important to charities, and I, for one, believe that they are the future of philanthropy in this country. They make up the largest segment of taxpayers. They include new workers and low and moderate income individuals who don't have many deductions. These are people we want to encourage to invest in their community. We need them to become involved, and we know that if they become involved as contributors now, they'll stay involved and they'll contribute when they become AMT filers.
I would just ask Mr. Pratt, Mr. Lair, or Representative Abrams, are you aware of individuals who have actually made complaints with your organizations that they did not receive a tax deductible, or their donation was not tax deductible because they were non-itemizers?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have not personally had complaints from non-itemizers regarding this section, but I take complaints every year during the United Way campaign time from AMT filers.
Mr. Pratt?
Mr. Chairman, actually, some of the concerns have come from the car donation programs, where some of the non-itemizers were led to believe that their car would be deductible, and it turned out that it was not.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Abrams.
As you may know, I've served on the board of trustees of the Minneapolis Art Institute, as well as on the Minnesota Orchestra. I currently serve on the board of director of the Guthrie Theater, and I can tell you that particularly the AMT is a problem, and that there are that the individuals involved engage in sophisticated tax planning, and the tax planning, because of the Chapman decision, has become somewhat more sophisticated in that people will have years in which they will give nothing because of the 1% limitation, and then load up in the next year knowing that they're going to go over the 1% limitation, and that it is affecting the timing of charitable contributions, and there's also an interplay with federal taxes and how you meter them. So this would, you know, I can't point to a contribution that wasn't made, Mr. Chairman, but I can point to a lot of rigmarole that was gone through simply because we haven't we have this add back into the AMT.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Well, along the lines you're asking, I'm just wondering how revenue got the fiscal note on this, because, you know, most of the Joe and Mary six packs that I know give to the United Way of Northeastern Minnesota, and they're not thinking about a tax deduction. And so I'm wondering who that doesn't itemize would be scheming in their mind that if they could get a deduction, they'd give more money, because I don't know anybody that cheap. So who are we talking about here?
Some of my close personal
thank
friends.
Thank you. Yeah, okay, representative. Made my, I guess you just.
You know Tony Curtis.
No, Tony is not cheap at all. Tony pulls out his wallet. But I'm just wondering who came up with this at revenue and how they arrived at the 9.5, 8.8, 9.5, and who they assume it's going to be. Is there somebody in the audience that can explain that to me from revenue? Well, usually there's 20 people in the audience.
You wanna, we, don't worry, Representative.
You got yourself a victim, Representative.
Thank you.
Pulled the first
I'm Mike Roloffs from the Department of Revenue, but I'm not going to be able to answer your question. I will take it back and ask our research department how they got the estimates on the number of participants, but I don't know that myself.
Can you also ask them, you know, in that estimate, if they're, you know, if they determine that a specific income bracket, i.e. the top one, would be the only ones to take advantage of this?
Okay, I will ask them for a further explanation of breakdown.
Well, Representative Rukavina, I think that the gentleman addressed this, that many nonprofits are out soliciting and for those contributions and telling individuals that their contribution is tax deductible, which I suppose if you want them to, we could require them to put a disclaimer on there and say that it's only tax deductible if they are if they file an itemized return in the state of Minnesota, that it is federally tax deductible. So we could maybe, Representative Rukavina, you want them, we could have a require them to put that disclaimer on there. I think they're concerned about the fact that they that many charitable nonprofit organizations tell individuals that when they give a contribution that it is tax deductible. So we don't want them to go out and lie to people, do we?
No, Mr. Chair, we certainly don't. But what I'm, and even under that proposal by Representative Abrams, you're only above $500. And so I'm wondering, you know, who's still so tight-fisted that they're scheming on this, because I don't know anybody other than Representative Davis, who volunteered himself, that would be, because most of the folks I know and I represent probably wouldn't qualify for the current proposal by Representative Abrams, so maybe he can correct me.
Representative Abrams, you want to respond to the that there are people out there that this people are going to give regardless of whether it's tax deductible for them?
Representative Krenke, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, what the bill does is two things. First, the current law is 50% of contributions greater than $500. And what we're doing is we're bumping that from 50% up to 100%. And this is an encouragement to non-itemizers to contribute more. Now, do I think that you're going to have a big rush of people give a whole lot more money because you're going from 50% to 100%? No, but it does send the right message that government is on your side and we're going to reward on the state level charitable contribution. That's the first piece of the bill. The second piece of the bill is the AMT section, in which there's a Minnesota add back for 1% of your gross income. You can only have for AMT purposes a deduction greater than 1% of your gross income. I can tell you that a lot of the people I know, Representative Rukavina, I wish I were in the category, Representative Rukavina, of some of the people I do know, but that this does affect conduct. And it is one of those sore thumbs that are out there. If you've been involved in a not-for-profit organization, I know a number of people on both sides of the aisle at this table have been, there's literally a pyramid for fundraising, and then there's an inverted pyramid for where the money comes from. And, you know, we may not want to acknowledge this, but that you may have 1% of the contributors to a charitable organization give 50, 60, 70% of the contributions to that organization. So the big givers are very important. And you are talking about significant amounts of money for some of these people who are affected. boy, have standards fallen. But you do have, Representative Rukavina,
but a nice bone.
You do affect conduct to a very large extent, given some of the dollars that are involved to some of the larger organizations. I'm familiar with three arts organizations. I would suspect that it is probably about the same story for United Way and some of the others, that you are affecting, that the Chapman decision is affecting conduct.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Rufini.
And listen, I commend you. I think it's a well-thought-out idea. Would I be generalizing if I would say that probably the majority of this $8 or $9 million or $10 million, as it grows, in a hit to the Department of Revenue, would be probably the same tax bracket who got the majority of the income tax cuts in the 99 and 2000 bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, you are incorrect.
I was asking
the information that we have from Ms. Nanzi, and we're going to get further information from the Department of Revenue, is of the $8.3 million, approximately $2.9 million would go to the AMT fix, and approximately $5.4 million would go to the non-itemizers. So it's about 60-65% to the non-itemizers under the bill, and the remaining 35-40% to the AMT filers.
And for clarification, Mr. Chair, the non-itemizers that you're referring to then would be more in line with the, Phil Krenke members of the committee than the Carl Polads of the state?
Well, Mr. Chairman, there is a bit of misconception as to who pays the Minnesota AMT. And you would be surprised, Representative Rukavina, the number of your constituents who you would view as not being wealthy. Certainly, you would give the speech benefit that much from the income tax cuts, who are AMT filers for a variety of reasons. If they have large interest deductions or large taxes or medical expenses that are high in any year in relation to their income, or they make a lot of charitable contributions, they too could be AMT filers. You would be surprised at the number of people representing Rukavina between $50,000 and $100,000 who are AMT filers in Minnesota.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I know that. Now, you know that Representative Mullery and Representative Adkins and Representative Dill might be getting close to that, but me and Jaros and Conan aren't there yet, so, you know, or Bernardi, I don't think. So I was just asking.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if Representative Rukavina would give more money to charity, he would be an AMT filer.
Mr. Chair, I'll bet you as a percentage of my income, I give way more than you.
You'd be surprised.
I just have to get Representative Rukavina to make more before he can give more, but anyway.
It's against my philosophy.
Did you want to defend yourself, Representative Atkins?
No, Mr. Chair, I'm actually quite proud to pay my fair share of the AMT, and there someday I'm certainly going to name a bridge after me or something important like that. I'm just curious if Joe and Mary Sixpack, Representative Rukavina, have a large mortgage and a lot of kids, because I suspect that Joe and Mary may be subject to the AMT as well.
Well, and that may be true, Mr. Chair. I know that more people are getting falling under that, but I probably don't know very many of them other than Representative Dill up north. But, you know.
Okay, Representative Dill gets equal time. Okay.
Well, I tell you what, I'm not going to defend being successful. That's a good thing. But I can say this. It's something that I'm happy with. But maybe we should put that warning about the tax deduction on Joe and Mary Six Pack. Maybe that's the right place.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rod.
I don't know, Representative Atkins, if you want a bridge named after you. You've already got a diet named after you. And I think it's made a heck of a lot of money, if I remember correctly.
And it's not working.
That'll be
the
idea.
Representative Davis and I are living proof it's not working.
Okay. A slight amount of decorum is requested in the Tax Committee. I think Representative Nelson has a serious question to this legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the gentleman from the United Way, gentleman in the middle, sorry, I forgot your name, but You made a comment during your testimony that I think is very important to be repeated. And the numbers I think you used is that to your best guesstimate, that the 99 had an impact of about $53 million, and that, in fact, if we really look at this as a state, as a society, that this really doesn't have a cost, that it really has a very large net gain. Just would you read that part of your testimony again, please?
Yes. Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, I think the basic point, and I agree with Representative Abrams, is that the decision to contribute is not made because of tax deductibility, but the amount is influenced by tax deductibility. So it's this leveraging effect that people realize that, well, it's good, and I'm going to be able to remember this for when I file my taxes. And so in 99, it was $53 million was deducted. So, and the non-itemizers may be paying at relatively low tax rates, so the cost to the state of their deduction is what it is, but it's a much larger amount that is being influenced. And I think the idea that we don't want to penalize people for engaging in public benefit activity, this has kind of been a tradition of the country of not to tax people when they're making charitable contributions.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Nelson.
And to that point, then, many of these nonprofits that do get some sustenance from the state actually or very likely would be needing less. Is that a correct assumption? They would get more contributions from the general public.
It's possible. Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, I think all the, whether it's foundations or the state or counties, when they work with nonprofits, usually they only pay part of the cost of providing any good or service. And I know the foundations ask, what are you doing to raise individual contributions? And there's a lot of pressure on organizations to broaden their base, to reach people. It is true that for many of the people, how do they reach that $500 threshold if they're a non-itemizer? For most people, they're also active in a religious congregation, and a large part of that $500 may be for religious purposes, which obviously is not motivated by tax deductibility, but as they think about, well, what else do they do when they're asked for funds or a volunteer, and I think people are aware of that.
Exactly. Thank you.
Any further questions by members? Anyone else in the audience who cares to testify on behalf or in opposition to House File 1254? If not, thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you, Representative Abrams. The chair will lay over House File 1254 for possible inclusion in the House Omnibus Tax Bill. Next, members, we have Representative House, House File 200, and Representative Marquardt. You want to do yours at the same time, or you want to do this separately?
They're a little different.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, they're a little different. So
you're a little different, Representative Marquardt? Is that what you said?
A little different, but the bills are somewhat different.
Okay. We'll let Representative Howes do his legislation first, then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move House File 200 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Tax Bill. And, Mr. Chairman, before I explain the bill, I have an amendment that would keep my time up here shorter. It's the A1 amendment.
Okay. You want to just... Chair, move the A1 amendment. Representative Howes, you want to give us just a brief idea what the amendment does?
The amendment would allow survivors of a veteran or disabled veteran or veteran over 65, and also would allow for the inclusion of the alternative minimum tax for this to be allowed in that.
Okay. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Any discussion? If seeing no discussion on the A1 amendment to House File 200, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those who are opposed, the amendment is adopted. Representative Howes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 200, as amended, would allow a $10,000 income tax subtraction for military pension income for veterans who are disabled or over 65 and their survivors, and it would also allow it to be used on the alternative minimum tax subtraction. Cost the state approximately $5.2 million. I stand for questions.
Corey.
That lengthy presentation, Representative Hollis.
Well, I could go on, but...
Mr. Chair, this is a good bill, and I think we should include it in the possible inclusion in the...
Okay. Any questions by members? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What level of military have pensions of 10,000 or more? It's not just six-pack.
No.
That is the retired four-star general?
No, Quartzcotch.
Quartzcotch?
Quartzcotch, I said.
No, I mean, is there some, what kind of people, what number of people are we talking about here? What level of retirement? It seems to me that's pretty high.
No, that's a grunt.
Mr. Chairman, do you want to give us an idea of
Representative Earhart, you will see in the next bill coming before you that does not have a limit would be significantly, would cost the state significantly more money on the bottom line than this bill does. There are people who retire from the military on pretty good pensions. So I'm not covering those folks that have retired with high rank and many years of tenure.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just was curious about the range of pension plans here that we're talking about for the military. I didn't realize that they had such huge pension plans.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
I've got a friend, Representative Abrams, that was just a mechanic type person in the Air Force that retires, and I think his pension's about $2,500 a month after a career.
Uh-huh.
25, 30 years in the service, so it's not that big of a pension at all. You know, so this, in that case, $15,000 would be exempt out of the 25 or so?
Mr. Chairman, or Representative Rukavina, the first $10,000 would be?
Would be exempt out of the 25.
Okay.
Well,
Representative Marquardt, I'm sorry.
Well,
Representative Earhart, you have a follow-up question here?
You know, Mr. Chairman and Representative Howes, I can't say that I'm going to oppose in this current climate anything against veterans, because they'd rise up and smote me, or however you say it, I'm sure. Being a veteran, although I'm thinking about this, we're rushing to do tons of things for veterans, and we're all listening to them tell us how much more we should be doing for them, and it's an interesting phenomenon that's going on right now, because we have a war going on that it's cost Americans, what, 1,000 deaths so far, 1,200? But we didn't do this for... Did we do this kind of thing for the really big chewers up of humanity, World War II, Korea? Why are we doing it now? That's a philosophical question, but you don't have to answer that. I just get... Yeah. I've seen so many military-related bills, I think that none of you are going to be re-elected unless you vote for or get a bill in for the veterans. That's my beginning to think. I don't have any. You got any I can sign on to?
I think you can sign on to this one if you want. Okay. The
I have that problem.
Members, in your packet, Ms. Manzi has given you some background of state taxation of military pensions, so you can see where the state of Minnesota is currently in relationship to how other states tax military pensions. So,
Representative McCourt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe just there's a question as to what
how much were these pensions and so forth. According to the revenue, and this was for the bill I was looking at, there's almost 14,000 military retirees receiving about $219 million. So that's an average of about $15,657 a year, $1,300 a month. That's the average. So no one's getting rich off of that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rucavino.
You know, in response to Representative Earhart, and I think, you know, he's correct in a way that a lot of people are falling over each other to try to do something. And but on this specific particular issue, I believe, and maybe Mr. Michaels remembers, but I believe in 87 or 88, maybe we took, there was a pension deduction for everybody in this state. And I can't remember if it was up to 10 grand or what the amount was, but we took it away, and wow, did we catch hell for many years from retirees over that. The argument back then was, and I suppose you could use it here, was that, you know, if you're going to have an income tax, it should be based on your real income, regardless of where you worked or what you did and how old you are. And this kind of does get away from that recent elimination of that pension deduction. But I can't remember if it was 10
grand. Michaels,
you
want to give us a little walk down memory lane?
Mr. Chair, I'll try to do that. There's a long history of how the Minnesota income tax taxed pensions back through the middle 70s. Pensions paid by public entities, so that, for example, if you had a federal civil service pension, a military pension, or a state and local pension, were entirely exempt from Minnesota income tax. And in the 70s, the legislature made a policy judgment that that probably didn't make sense and modified that to the provision that Representative Rucavina was talking about, where all pensions were allowed a dollar-limited exclusion. So an individual that have a private pension or an IRA or something like that would qualify equally with the government folks. And that was capped, I believe, at $11,000 when it was repealed in 1987 as part of the tax reform, under the theory that Representative Rucavina was pointing out, that income from all sources ought to be taxed roughly equally, so that a person with $10,000 or $11,000 of pension income and the person next door that has $11,000 of wage income would pay the same tax, because the thought is that they have the same ability to pay. And yes, there was a lot of negative reaction to that, and in the aftermath of that, I think in 1988 a credit was enacted for all elderly people, and then that was changed to what we now have, an elderly exclusion that allows a subtraction, again without regard to source, for all elderly filers. That's very seriously income limited, and tax exempt Social Security is deducted from that, so very few people get much benefit from it because of both the income limit and the Social Security subtraction. And that has, because it hasn't been indexed for inflation and was last adjusted in the middle 90s, fewer and fewer people qualify for that sort of broad-based elderly exclusion. So that's sort of the 5-cent history of pension taxation in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rucavina.
Thank you, Mr. Michaels. I knew you'd know the answer. And now, Representative Earhart, we're starting to go back to a reason why we should give somebody a deduction on a pension. It's up to us to make that decision, right? But if you're going to wave the flag, would you at least help me wave one made in the USA?
To Representative Rucavina's point, Representative Howes, what legislation do we see coming next? Is it going to be exemption of pensions for police and fire?
Well,
Chairman, that's not a bad idea.
So if you move the Social Security,
oh, you can pay in.
I see two members to my left here. They're getting closer and closer all the time. Representative Howes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm satisfied with the piece of legislation I have here before you, and I don't have any desire to go further with this at this time.
That's not what the chairman asked you, Representative Howes.
Mr. Chairman, this member knows that's not what the chairman asked me. But this member is answering in the best way he can without directly answering the chairman.
Representative Broad, did you have a question?
No, Mr. Chair, I just had a comment. Just in regards to some of the terms that are being thrown out, you know, we're falling all over each other or rushing to help the veterans. I think what that shows is that it's risen on the priority level of more people. And I don't see that as a bad thing. I see that as a good thing. I think more and more people are affected personally by things that are happening in the world, not only here in the States, and the military plays a strong role in how we are impacted. So I don't see it as falling over each other. I don't see it as rushing to judgment or rushing to help. I see it as rising the priority level for things that impact our military and recognizing the impacts that they have on our lives.
Mr. Chair. Through my tears, can I respond to that? It's too
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair and Representative Brown, it's too bad, though, that, you know, on a federal level, we have a president whose new budget proposal includes $11 billion hit to the Veterans Affairs Department, and that my constituents now have to travel much farther on the Iron Range to go to a veterans doctor because the bid was made out in D.C., the request for proposal, that Fairview couldn't bid on it. They weren't big enough in this state. And so 2 years ago, a veteran could go to any Fairview clinic in the whole state and see a veterans a person where the Veterans Affairs would pay for it. Now, we've got some outfit from Missouri, nothing against Missouri, but they were the only ones capable of bidding on that. And so we have this Missouri medical health care conglomerate that's providing our veterans and many of my veterans, and including I believe Representative Anderson's, really have to travel far to go see a doctor.
Mr. Chair, I just have a quick response. I'm not running
okay,
for Congress. I'm not running for Congress, so I want to do the things that we can impact here on the state level. There's obviously some things that need to happen on the federal level as well, I agree, but let's do what we can do on the state level and wipe the tears away.
Okay. Representative Knobloch, you are running for Congress. Do you have a comment on this? Do I have to, Mr. Chair? Well, all right, Mr. Chair. I'll help Representative Howes out here. Representative Howes, let me ask you. I have been told that we have one of the least favorable tax structures in the country for veterans who are looking to retire, and that when they are looking at retiring in different states, many don't want to come here because we tax their pensions and such at a higher rate than many other states. Could you tell me, is that true? Do you have any sense for how we rank with other states in that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knobloch, I did know that answer, but I don't have the memory that Representative Abrams has and can tell you these things. I can tell you that the surrounding states are more fair than we are. And if we move this forward, it will level the playing field a little bit more.
Well, thank you, Representative Howes, and thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, you should feel free to make some comments, too.
I think, Representative Earhart, did you want to make any more comments? Or
well, Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering if we have Representative Broad suggesting that nobody's interested in getting reelected here, and that's perhaps caught the attention that this is a hot issue or merging to the surface, and so I thought maybe that might have something to do with it, too, but I guess not.
Representative Davids, you are running for re-election?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hart said we're not concerned about being re-elected. I am.
Thank you.
Well, what's that bill you're carrying? No wonder. Ethanol.
Mr. Chair?
Okay, let's...
Was he referring to the bill he paid the other day?
I pay my bill.
Okay. Representative Howes, do you have any other final comments before we lay this bill over for
Mr. Chairman, when I made my 30 seconds worth of comments, it turned into 10 minutes of commentary. So, no, I would like to renew my motion that House File 200, as amended, would be laid over for consideration in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Representative Howes. We'll lay over, where are we? House File 200 for possible inclusion. As amended, I'm sorry. As amended. Just want to make that we did add your amendment. So after that tough crowd, Representative Mark Ward, are you ready?
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Chairman. I am. And Mr. Chairman, members, if I could move the A2 amendment to put the bill into the proper form, and it does the very same thing that Representative House's bill also did,
okay.
His amendment.
Representative Mark Ward moves the A2 amendment. Any comments, discussion to the A1 amendment, right? A1 amendment, A2 amendment.
Is there A2 amendment?
A2. I'm moving. I'm shuffling here. A2 amendment. I'm sorry. So again, members, this puts the bill in the form that the chair or that the author requests. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the A2 amendment to House File 571. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those who are opposed, the amendment is adopted. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. House File 571 would provide a full subtraction for military pensions for veterans, and now as amended for surviving spouses, dependents, and also applies to the alternative minimum tax. So whereas Representative House's bill would exempt the first $10,000 of the pension, this would exempt all of the pension. And Representative Knobloch had asked, how does Minnesota rank with other states? And Ms. Manzi actually put together, and you have that in the packet, a very good summary of how it does rank. But briefly, of the 41 states that do have an income tax, there are 12 states, including Wisconsin, that excludes all of the military pension as a subtraction. And that's what House File 571 would do. So House File 571 would join the 12 other states that also exempt the entire military pension. Now, 14 states exclude a fixed amount of the military pension, and that would include Representative House's bill. It goes from $2,000 exemption in Indiana to about $40,000, exempting the first $40,000 in Kentucky. Neighboring states, North Dakota, excludes the first $5,000 of military pension income, and Iowa excludes the first $6,000 of any pension income. There's also five states that include a fixed amount of a military pension subtraction for low-income taxpayers, and that would be actually Minnesota. Mr. Michaels had mentioned the elderly exclusion, and that would be right now where military veterans would qualify in Minnesota. So in comparison to other states, we do, as you mentioned, Representative Knobloch, we're below the average, if you will, on how we rank. And you bring up an excellent point on where you might retire and so forth. Two states do allow a credit against tax liability, and eight states actually do not exempt any type of pensions at all. You know, when I'm out and about and meeting with residents and meet with veterans, one of the things that come up from time to time is this military pension. And they see that as really an issue of fairness and respect. And a lot of times, although we don't have any control over this, veterans will mention the retirement pension exemption. Of course, that's federal law that requires the state to do that. But they see that as a real fairness question. And, you know, I know we've talked a lot about veterans and these bills and so forth, but Representative Abrams isn't here right now, but I thought he made a... Oh, I'm sorry. There he is. But he made a great quote in his bill when he was talking about that. It does send the right message that the state is on your side. And this bill would recognize the special and unique service and sacrifice that veterans provide for our community, for state, and our nation. And I know it does have a cost of about $31 million over the next 2 years. And, you could phase it in if you wanted. Like, we might be looking at the AMT or the single sales factor. It could be phased in. But I think whatever relief we could do here would send a great signal and signal of support for our veterans. And I'll stand for questions with that.
Representative Markwart, let me ask you the same question that I asked Representative Howes. What pension exclusions are next?
Mr. Chair and members, I have no further intentions for any further exclusions. I'll take the Howes approach on that answer.
So I think Representative Rukavina brought this point up previously. We can see by looking at the information that staff prepared here that, there are other states that that have exclusions for government pensions. Again, we can obviously a potpourri of various state laws regarding pension exclusions, amounts, types, etc. So I guess the question is, with doing this, are we starting to open we open the door a little bit? Where are we going? I mean, again, my theory would be we probably shouldn't tax pensions at all. But you earn the income once. Should you have to pay taxes on it twice? But
well, Mr. Chair, I mean, you bring up an excellent point. Where do we go from here? But there's numerous occasions of special legislation in our laws. You can go through those green books behind you and find that all over the place. And if we're going to have special legislation, I think this is an excellent opportunity to do that because there is a very special and unique service that veterans provide, unlike anyone else. And so I think when you look at special legislation, this would probably apply better than any.
Did you want me to bring some of the have some of the first responders in the state call your office, Representative Markwart? I think some of the people who are out protecting us on our local streets and highways might differ with. I mean, there's no question that those people who are in the military provide a sacrifice of time, effort, and many ways that we can't recount as we sit here, and they're in harm's way in some foreign land. But I'm just saying again, I think we start to open the door. The question is to how much, who, and it is a difficult question. And members, I would just raise that again, the reason that as a committee we went through some background model tax code from the Department of Revenue. Had the Minnesota Taxpayers Association here to talk about model tax codes. Had the Growth and Justice people here to talk about their views of tax code. Is that, and I think the similarity in all of them was that we have a uniformity in tax policy. We have transparency in tax policy. So I have no question here that military personnel provide a sacrifice which is extraordinary, but how do we start singling out one group with regard to the pension benefits that other individuals may or may not receive, and the amount of the deduction? Representative Howes obviously capping it, and in your legislation no cap. So, have you thought about all those things, Representative Markwart?
Mr. Chair, I certainly realize the complexity that special legislation does lend itself to, but the problem with any laws that one size fits all always creates inequities, and I think this is a fairness issue on this one.
Representative Earhart?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I want to throw this up a general question. Are we doing anything about, since we're talking about veterans' bonuses or related educational benefits, similar to the GI Bill, is there any legislation going on with that that anyone knows about or would eventually get here?
Representative Earhart, I believe there are there is legislation with regard to bonuses for veterans, but that legislation would not come before the tax committee. We do have legislation that would provide that was heard in state government finance coming. Is it at the tax committee yet? Be up Thursday that provides a checkoff to fund. To check off on the tax form that goes to help military families. It would be a fund under the Adjutant General to provide some funds for military families. So I think we're going to see some other legislation with regard to military issues. Representative Mullery.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Marquardt, I know you said we should do this because people put their life in harm's way for our safety, and since I'm representing part of the most dangerous area in the state, according to the recent murders and things like that, and I see what is happening, would you would you accept an amendment on this to do the same for the police then, in those, since they're in at least as dangerous a situation?
Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, no, I would not, but I'd certainly be willing to introduce a bill separately on that.
Representative Knobloch.
Representative Mullery, I thought you were going to ask for an exemption for yourself when you were out door knocking.
Certainly in harm's way. Yeah. Okay. Is there anyone in the audience who wants to testify in favor of House File 571 or in opposition? Anyone in the audience? If there are no further questions or comments, Chair will lay over House File 571 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you much.
Thank you. The members, I just want to make several announcements. First and foremost, I would encourage those, thank those of you who filled out your tax chair questionnaire. You'll be getting a special bonus gift from the chairman for filling those out. For those of you who have not, we would please request that you do that to help us as we start into a very busy time for the committee when we are scheduling and hearing a plethora of legislation. I will also make an announcement that we're referring a number of bills down to the division. Those bills in the division are piling up quickly. I won't read off the list, but the list is available for members and the public from the either the legislative assistant to the committee or from the committee administrator. Tomorrow, members, there is no full committee meeting. Tomorrow will be a division meeting so that they can hear some legislation, start moving on the backlog of legislation they have in the division. So, with that, Representative Vanderveer, would you please move the minutes of the March 1st meeting?
No more.
Any additions, deletions, corrections to the minutes from March 1st? If not, all those in favor of the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those who are opposed, minutes are adopted. Meeting is adjourned, members. Thank you.